I wonder why you've come here this morning. Quite seriously, I'd like you to ask yourself that question now. Just take a moment to ask yourself the question, why are you here? Why did you come here this morning? Okay, most of you here are members of this church, or at least you attend here regularly. And maybe the reason you're here this morning is, well, that's what you do. You try to come to all the meetings we hold here. You're faithful, you're loyal. So when we said that there'd be a meeting this morning, you didn't even ask yourself whether you'd be coming or not. You just took it for granted that you should be here. And we're glad for that. And then maybe there are other folk here who have come because someone invited you to come. And maybe you weren't terribly keen. But you wanted to please them, or maybe you felt embarrassed to say no. Perhaps you said no lots of times before, but you thought you'd go along with it this time, just this once. Well, I'm glad that you're here. Some people will go to church on Good Friday just because that's a traditional thing to do. And there are folk who like that sort of tradition. Easter wouldn't feel right if you didn't get to church at some point. It's part of our UK culture. So you thought, well, why not? It's part of the culture that I grew up with as well. But I hope that for some of you, there is more to it than that. I think that there will be people turning up in churches on Good Friday this year who haven't been for a long time. Maybe who haven't ever been. And it's because something has happened in their life which has shaken them and has left them curious or left them unsettled. And they're asking themselves, should I at least investigate what Christianity is all about? Maybe it has some answers. We're living in a very weird time, aren't we? A lot of the things that people were very sure of a little while back just don't seem so certain any longer, do they? And lots of us are feeling very insecure. And we're looking just for something that will make sense of the world and our lives. And I think there are folk who are asking, could it be Christianity, or even could it be Jesus Christ? And maybe there'll be people turning up in church today, in different churches across our country, who have thought, well, Good Friday seems as good a day as any to at least check it all out. So ask yourself the question, why have I come this morning? I suggest you try and put the answer into words in your own mind, just so that you're sure of it for yourselves. Whatever the reason is, anyway, it is a good thing that you are here. And I would say that God has brought you here this morning. Anyway, let me tell you why I'm here. I'm here because I want to tell you about Jesus Christ. I want to help you to look at Jesus this morning. Whether you're a Christian already, whether you've been to a church or this church hundreds of times, thousands of times in the past, or whether this is the first time in years that you've stepped into a church, I want to show Jesus Christ to you. In the end, that's why this church holds a service on Good Friday, so that together we can look at Jesus Christ, and especially at Jesus Christ hanging on a cross. We're here this morning to look at a broken, hurting, dying man. Some of us looked at that man for the first time many years ago. And when we saw him, not with our physical eyes, but when we saw him in our imagination and in our hearts, that changed our lives forever. Ever since then, we've wanted to go back to look at him again and again and again. And every time we do look at Jesus Christ, we find something strange happening in ourselves. We find peace and hope and certainty in a way that we don't find it anywhere else. So some of you have come back this morning saying, I know, I want to see Jesus Christ again. But for those of you who have never really looked at Jesus, well, it's my job to show him to you. Because I can tell you that if you only see Jesus this morning, nothing will ever be the same again for you. We've just read about him. Now I want you to see him. You're looking at a man. He's nothing special to look at. He's a working man. He's a carpenter. Remember, that was his job for most of his life. And you'd know it just by looking at his hands. There are the splinter scars and the calluses that betray someone who's worked with wood for decades. And for the last 3 years, this man has been travelling around the country on foot in all weathers. He's often had to sleep rough, so his face is weather-beaten and sunburned. Just look at that man. He's looking tired, drained, exhausted. Why? Because he's been on his feet all night being interrogated. And now he's been sentenced to death. They're going to flog him before they crucify him. And that's what they do. A team of soldiers ties him to a post. And then one of them picks up a whip. It's a whip of many cords, and it's got little sharp metal blades tied into the cords. And this man lifts it, and he brings it down with all his strength across Jesus' back. And a web of bleeding stripes appears like magic across his back. And the soldier repeats that again and again and again until his back is like a ploughed field and there's blood flowing everywhere. But he's still conscious. And when they untie him, he's still on his feet. And they take him through to the barracks. And then the whole battalion gathers round to have some fun. So they strip him. And then they wrap an old scarlet robe round him. Because they know that he had claimed to be a king. So they put a royal robe on him. And then they twist a branch of thorns into a circle. And they jam it down onto his head. And one of them picks up a stick and gives it to him to hold, a wooden scepter. And then they begin to jeer, "Hail, King of the Jews!" It's a great joke. And then their mood changes, and they begin to knock him about. They take the stick out of his hand, and they begin to hit him around the head with it, until his face is a mass of blood and bruises. And then they take him out to put him to death. They lead him through the streets. He's got to carry that cross on the shoulders that have already been shredded by the whip. Can you see him? Can you see that man stumbling through the streets? They have to seize a stranger out of the crowd. They have to make him carry the cross for Jesus in the end, because Jesus is collapsing under the weight. They take Jesus out through the city gates. They take him to a place called Golgotha. And then their mood changes again. They feel a pang of pity for him. Somebody's brought along a flask of drugged wine, and they offer that to him, something to dull the pain. And he takes a sip, and he realizes what it is. And he says, no, I can't take it. What he's going to go through, he wants to go through it knowing, feeling it all. He's got to stay conscious. And then they strip off his clothes again, and they lay him down on the cross. And he stretches out his arms on the crossbeam. And they pick up a hammer and nails. And they hammer the nails through his hands and through his feet to pin him there. And then they haul the cross up so that it's standing upright. It's locked into a hole in the ground. And Jesus is hanging there, naked, drenched in blood. He's hanging between the sky and the earth. Can you see him now? He's a criminal. And he's hanging there for all the world to see, with two other criminals hanging there on their crosses, on each side of him. And lots of people are passing by. And they are laughing when they see him. Once, much earlier, he had said something about the temple being destroyed. And he'd said that he would rebuild it in 3 days. And now they're throwing that back at him. You were going to destroy the temple, weren't you? You were going to rebuild it in 3 days? Well, doesn't look like it now, does it? Save yourself if you can. If you're God's son, that's what you said, isn't it? Come down from the cross. It wasn't only the passers-by, the local yobs, who were shouting abuse at him. Many of the best-known national leaders, the religious leaders, the politicians, they were there on the spot, and they were laughing at him. He saved others. Can't save himself. King of Israel, is he? Well, let's see him come down from the cross. Then we'll believe in him. Oh, he trusts in God. Well, then let's see God rescue him. Even the thieves who were hanging on the other crosses were laughing at him. Can you see him? Naked man hanging there, surrounded by his enemies, surrounded by people who hate him. They're mocking him. Who is this man that they hate so much? This is a man who has lived a life of perfect, beautiful goodness. This is a man who has loved God with all his heart and who spent all his days caring for other people. He's been there for hurting people and frightened people and guilty people. He's been there for them night and day. He's fed the hungry, and he's cured people who were ill, and he's comforted people who were broken-hearted. He's a man who's never let up on himself because he's always been there for others. He's never lied to anyone. He's never exploited anyone. He's never hurt anyone. This is a perfect man. And more than that, he's God's son. There, in that smashed, bleeding body, God is dwelling. He's a real man, but he is also God's son. And he's got all power in his hands. The power that made the universe lives in that man. But now he's let those hands be nailed to that cross. And he doesn't come down from the cross. He doesn't save himself. He doesn't strike down his enemies who are laughing at him. Can you see him as he hangs there, enduring it all? It's noon now. Not far off noon for us. But on that day, noon arrived, and the sun was beating down on his tortured body. But then something terrifying happened. The world began to grow dark. At noonday, darkness fell over the face of the whole land. Is it an eclipse? Or is this God simply blotting the sun out of the sky? I don't know. I can't see Jesus anymore now. Something's happening to him which I can't see, which I can't understand. Something very private, something very mysterious. But I know that he's there. He's hanging in that darkness. He's hanging there alone. He's cut off. He's lonely. He is lonelier than you or I have ever been. For 3 hours, as we measure time, darkness lies over the world. And then, out of the darkness, Jesus cries out. And it's the most terrible cry. They're the most terrible words that the world has ever heard. Shall I tell you the words that actually came from his lips in the language in which he was calling, the language we call Aramaic? Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? It's a question. It's a tortured, terrified question. And in English it means this: my God, why have you forsaken me? It's the cry of a child who's been abandoned by his parents. It's the cry of somebody who's desolate, bewildered, helpless, who's been thrown out and doesn't know why. Why have you abandoned me? Can you hear that cry coming out of the darkness? Do you know why he's been forsaken? Do you know why God has left him to hang there, lonely and abandoned. I don't know everything that's happening there in the darkness, but I know why he's there. He's there for me. He's there in my place. I ought to be there in the darkness, abandoned by God, cast away forever because of my sins, because of all the people I've hurt over the years, because of the lies I've told again and again, because of my pride and my laziness and my selfishness, because of the way I've treated God, because of the years when I forgot God and ignored him and resented him. I deserved to be left in the darkness, cut off from God. But Jesus took my place. My sins, my guilt, all the horrible things I've done, they were transferred to him. And he took them all on himself. That's why he couldn't come down from the cross. That's why he didn't save himself. He'd chosen to save me instead. He'd agreed to take my punishment. And now there was no escape for him. He had to pay the whole price. For me. It was my sins he was carrying. It was my punishment he was taking. He knew already, back then, that one day I would ask God to pardon me for all my sins. This was the price he had to pay if God was going to say yes to that prayer. He had to take the punishment that I deserved. How do I feel about that? I feel ashamed. I feel sick about the fact that it was my selfish life. It was my twisted choices that made it necessary for him to go through what he did go through. I almost feel that I've got no right to ask to be forgiven if that's what it cost. But then I remember that he did it willingly. He did it because that's what he's like. He really was willing to take my sins on his own head. He really was willing to pay the price in full to save me. Because he really cares about bad people like me. The man who was hanging there on the cross was there because he loved me. He went through it all willingly, driven by love. I mean, you may say, well, but this happened. But all this happened long before you were born. Yeah, it did. But remember, for God, there is no past, there's no present, there's no future. He's outside of our time. When Jesus, God's Son, was nailed to that cross, he already knew me. He already knew just what I was like. He already knew just what a hopeless, selfish, worthless person I was going to be. And he already loved me. And he was already willing to take the blame for me. He'd already heard me saying, I need to be saved. And he'd already said, I will save you, whatever the cost. So what about you? When you look at that man hanging on the cross, What do you see? Is he there for you? Is he carrying your sins? Is he taking your punishment in your place? Do you see there someone who loves you enough to die for you? That man there in the darkness, has he got your sins on his head? Lots of people who were there on that day, watching all the events, didn't really see him at all. Or at least they didn't understand at all. Even those words, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, they couldn't understand those words. When he cried it out, Eli, Eli, my God, my God. They got it all wrong. They thought he was calling Elijah to come and rescue him. Some of them felt sorry for him because they thought he was delirious. That's why they offered him wine again. And some of them were impressed and said, well, maybe Elijah will come and save him. But none of them really understood what it meant. That here was God's Son, bewildered and abandoned, crying out to his Father in heaven. None of them understood that he was paying the price for worthless people to be saved. Do you understand? When you look at that man Jesus hanging there on the cross, what do you see? Do you see a good man being treated unfairly and cruelly? Do you see a martyr dying for a doomed cause? Or do you see God's own Son, God's beloved Son, carrying your sins, dying in your place, out of love? Do you see him paying the price for you to be forgiven and to come back to God? Please, look at him. Look at him now. Whatever the reason for which you came here this morning, look at him. Look at his body being shredded by the whip. Why? So that sinful, damaged people like me, like you, can have their ruined lives healed. Look at his hands, look at his feet. They've been pinned to that cross by nails. He can't lift a hand to help himself. But now his hands have the power to rescue you. Look at his face. It's swollen, it's bruised, it's battered beyond recognition. But I think I can still see his eyes, and there's love in those eyes. And they're smiling at you, telling you that he cares about you. Listen to that cry. My God, why have you forsaken me? And then remember the words that he speaks to everyone who trusts themselves to him. I will never leave you, nor forsake you. The one who was forsaken promises that he will never forsake anyone who trusts him. When I see Jesus, Jesus on the cross, I'm seeing justice. I'm seeing justice carried out. God, who is perfectly holy, perfectly just, is not ignoring my sin. He's not acting as if it never happened. He's punishing it. But it's his own Son who's taking the punishment. When I see Jesus crucified, I see courage. Amazing, unparalleled courage.
He's willing to experience torment for me. He's willing to face that darkness for me. He's willing to be forsaken for me. That's courage. When I see Jesus crucified, I see my own salvation. I see that he really did pay the whole price. And that now I can be forgiven for everything. There are things on my conscience that I wouldn't want anybody here ever to know about. But those things, every one of them, are forgiven because he took the punishment for them. I know I can return to God. I can be at peace. I know I can have everlasting life. He's my salvation. But most of all, when I see Jesus crucified, I see love. He loved me. He gave himself for me. Will you be here on Easter Sunday? I hope so. Because on Easter Sunday we'll be looking at Jesus again. And we'll be remembering that the one who died rose again from the dead. And that he's alive now. He's alive forever. And because he's alive now, I can not only look at him, I can meet him. He can forgive me. He can change me. He can give me hope and meaning and strength for every day. He can share his own everlasting life with me and with you. If you look at him and trust yourself to him.